Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
We are in the second week of our first message series of the 2020-2021 season, and it will certainly be a stressful season. One of the challenges being how much more difficult it has become to treat people as we would like to treat them, as we would ideally like to treat them, given partisan politics and social distancing and everything else that's going on. When it comes to social distancing, though, it's not all bad. Masks, for instance, definitely have their upside. I found that when wearing a mask, I enjoy greater anonymity, which I especially appreciate in the grocery store. Whenever I run into people who know me in the grocery store, I can sense them or just obviously see them checking out what I'm buying. I mean, no kidding, staring into my shopping cart. And as a result, guilting me, shaming me out of getting some of the things I would otherwise get at the grocery store. But with the advent of masks, it's like total freedom. Nobody notices. I can do whatever I want. I did take this too far, though, recently. I got stuck in the checkout line behind a really annoying woman who was taking way too long checking out. And out of boredom, I started scanning the gossip tabloids that are displayed there, which honestly, I would never otherwise ever do. Turned out, I just couldn't resist. I mean, who knew how interested I would be on the latest sighting of the Loch Ness Monster? And the real reason Harry and Meghan moved to LA was fascinating. Of course, no sooner do I pick up the magazine than I hear, "Hi, Father Y." It's a stressful season for sure, and tense too, because there are so many uncertainties, right? There's uncertainty about the COVID crisis and the related health concerns it brings. There's uncertainty about the election and the economy. There's uncertainty about schools and jobs, to name just a few of the uncertainties we face. There's all kinds of uncertainty, but one thing remains certain. Jesus Christ still calls us to follow him today, as he always has. That's certain. And he calls us as a church to support one another as we all try to do the same. That's certain, too. It's certain. It just isn't easy. It never is. But especially now, with all this uncertainty, it won't be easy. In fact, the challenge that we're facing is actually to our character and our heart. Whether we come through all of this with stronger character and greater hearts, or diminished character and hurting hearts, will depend in large measure on how we treat one another during this time, especially those who are hard to love, or continue to disappoint, or just flat out disagree with us. We all know that we want to be loving people. And we all know that we have room for improvement, there's a gap. And here's the thing. During this difficult period, that gap can grow if we're not careful. We tend to see people as the world sees people, defined by political opinions, ethnicity, income. The world pushes us to view people as Democrats or Republicans, conservatives or liberals, mass proponents or mass dissenters. In short, the world drives us to dehumanize people into categories and classes and causes over which we can stand apart as distinct or even above as morally superior. But God doesn't judge anyone's worth in any of those ways. And when we learn to see people as God sees people, it's easier to love them as God loves them. And that's what this series is all about. The goal of this series is to align our view of people with God's view. Last week, we looked at the fact that God has forgiven us a debt we cannot repay. So, when others hurt us or annoy us or just get in our way, Jesus teaches us to cancel their debt too. We love people best by forgiving them their faults and flaws and failures, just as God has forgiven us. Today's message follows logically, if unexpectedly, from last week's. And basically, it's this. I'll give you the whole sermon in a sentence right up front. It comes down to don't play fair. Don't play fair. Fair means even, equitable, impartial. And it works well when it comes to sports and games, to money and commercial transactions. It works not at all when it comes to people. If you want to really grow in faith by loving people as Jesus asks us to love people, don't play fair. Fair doesn't work. Good people fail at relationships every single day because they're focused on fair. Playing fair can ruin relationships, destroy friendships, and break up marriages. In fact, fair will keep you from doing the good you know you could and should do. God doesn't want you to play fair. In fact, Jesus teaches us something much, much better than fair. And we see it played out in a story, a parable that is taken from the 20th chapter of Matthew's gospel. You know, in all the parables, Jesus raises the veil between heaven and earth, helping us to understand earth in the larger context, the greater context of heaven. And that's what he's doing here. And the story goes like this. The kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out at dawn to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with them for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. So this guy has a vineyard. He needs laborers for his harvest. So he goes to the marketplace to look for people to help him out. It was a common custom. Laborers would congregate in the marketplace looking for work. These guys are the working poor. But on this day, they have good fortune. They find employment. They agree to the normal pay for their work, and then they get to work. By the way, I misspoke last week regarding the common wages of a laborer. Allow me to clarify. The currency was called denarii, and day laborers could expect to earn a single denarii, one denarii, for a full day's work. That's what these guys sign up for. Going out about 9 o'clock, he, the landowner, saw others standing in the marketplace and said to them, "You two go into the vineyard, and I will give you what is just." And so they went off. Measurements of time were always approximate in the absence of anything equivalent to a clock or watch. So with about a quarter of the daylight hours gone, the owner went out again to the marketplace. He needs more help to get the job done. And in fact, as the story proceeds, we read he repeats this process throughout the day, continuing to send laborers into the vineyard until late in the day. Look what happens next. When it was evening, the owner of the vineyard said to the foreman, "Summon the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and ending with the first." The Torah, the Jewish law, required that hired workers be paid each day at the end of the day. These fellows lived hand to mouth. They needed their money immediately. Unexpectedly, though, the first ones to get paid are the ones who only began work at the very end of the day. When those who had started about 5 o'clock came, they received the usual day wages. So when the first came, they thought they would receive more. They thought they would get more. Since they worked more, they deserved more, they demanded more. More was only fair. They grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last ones worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who bore the day's burden and the day's heat." You have to agree with what they've got to say, right? I do. They definitely worked harder and longer under more challenging conditions. They seem to have a right to complain, and if we were in the same situation, we'd be thinking the same thing too. We'd complain. But take a closer look at their complaint. What is it they're complaining about? "You have made them equal to us." You have made them equal to us. It isn't fair to us that you are generous to them. It isn't fair to us that you are generous to them. This kind of thinking happens all the time. We don't give generously to someone or something because we think someone else might complain. If I treat this kid in a special way, that kid will hear about it. If I allow time off for her, then he'll complain. If I give a raise to that department, then everybody in the company will want one too. So the group grumbles and complains. It's not fair. He said to one of them in reply, "My friend, I'm not cheating you. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what is yours and go. What if I wish the last one the same as you?" He wasn't trying to insult the guys who worked throughout the course of the day. He paid them what was promised, which was the usual wage of 1 denarii. He gave them what they were owed. He just chose to give others more than they were owed. In some cases, a lot more. He doesn't want to insult the latter group, but he does question their motivation. "Am I not free to do as I wish with my own money, or are you envious because I am generous?" Another translation of the same verse introduces us to the famous phrase, "evil eye." He says, "Is your eye evil because I am generous?" That expression, "the evil eye," was a common one, a Semitic idiomatic expression describing someone of ill intent, up to no good, motivated by envy. The expression intends to remind us that envy can be a mighty wicked thing. That's why a distinction can be made between envy and jealousy. They're not necessarily the same thing. Jealousy is when you want something someone else has. Envy is when you want something someone else has and you don't want them to have it. Jealousy is a common reaction. It happens all the time. All of us experience jealousy. It's natural. It's normal. It's not necessarily a terrible thing. It can actually be a good thing if it motivates us into action and activity. Wanting what someone else has means you value it, you like it, you love it, you're willing to work toward it. God is jealous. God is jealous of your heart. He wants your heart. You can be jealous too. It's all right. You can be jealous of someone who has a great marriage or an awesome job or a fabulous home. Jealousy means you want what they have. Envy means you want to take away what they have. You want to diminish or destroy their happiness, their blessing, their good fortune. And that's these guys. And the landowner calls them out on it and points out that their way of thinking is just wrong. Now, we've said before in a parable, somebody's usually God and somebody's usually us, and it's usually not difficult to figure out who's who. So the owner of the vineyard obviously represents God, but think about that. He isn't fair. That means God isn't fair. He doesn't play fair. Fair means even, equitable, impartial, and God isn't any of those things. God doesn't value fair. God values grace and mercy. Grace and mercy. God values unmerited favor, and he doesn't let fair get in the way, and that's the way he wants us to be, too. And I'll go ahead and admit it right up front. I'm no good at this. This does not come naturally to me, not at all. But let me share one recent example where I actually was somewhat good at it. Headed into this COVID season, I knew it was going to be difficult for everybody on our staff, as it is for everyone, but difficult in different ways for different people. Some people have pre-existing conditions. Some people have elderly parents. Some people have kids they must now homeschool. In the quarantine last spring, work schedules were a non-issue. They were a moot point, but now they're not. They're very much an open question. Fair would say everyone returns to the office. Everybody works normal hours, period. But we didn't do that. We worked with each person on staff to try and figure out how to accommodate their schedules, their challenges, and their concerns. Another way to say this is a principle that we picked up from a pastor friend of ours at another church. He likes to say, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. Do for one what you wish you could do for everyone. When there's an opportunity to generously give to another, don't use the excuse, I can't do this for everyone, so I'm not going to do it for anyone. Don't think like that. Make the difference you can make. Make the contribution you can make. Make the gift that you can make when and where you can make it. In fact, I want to offer this challenge this week. This week, at least once, just once. Go ahead and be generous. Be extravagantly generous. Be ridiculously generous. Be prodigiously generous with someone else in a way that you couldn't possibly repeat for others. It doesn't have to be with money. It can be with service or support, comfort or care. It can be the gift of your time. This week, be ridiculously generous just once and see how that feels. And don't let fair get in your way.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seeing the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, HOLO is here to help. HOLO is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. from meditations on the daily gospel to the rosary to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.